Hey, hey.
Got now, I don't chill, got next. Got now, I don't chill, got next. Got now, I don't chill, got next. Got next. Got next. Got now, I don't chill, got next.
Hey, what's going on, man? Welcome back to the Who Got Next podcast. I know you haven't heard me in a while. As I stated to you before, I took a little podcast PTO, you know, moved, still in Charlotte, but had to let the podcast go for like a split second. But I am back. I'm up and I'm running and I am back with the guest. This guest, she is a Detroit native.
Michigan native.
I didn't want to make sure I got her. She is a Michigan native, and she came down to Charlotte 5 years ago. I had the lovely opportunity to meet her at an event between a mutual friend, and ever since then, me and her kind of had a cordial friendship.
Absolutely.
Cordial friendship, and she has an organization that we are going to talk about today. You know, she comes from a background of having twinkle toes. This is my own personal Misty Copeland.
Yes.
But please welcome Noelle Pipkin to the Who Got Next podcast. How you doing, ma'am?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for coming on and thank you for being patient.
Absolutely.
Patient with
no
me.
No worries.
Yeah, I have no idea the struggle that I've been trying to get back in. So, of course, you know we all are in COVID.
Yeah.
And if you're hearing a difference in the sound quality, I decided to come back into the studio. I was, of course, working from home with the podcast and stuff like that. But I needed to take an initiative to get over my nerves and come back into an environment that shows to be safe. So shout out to the studio that I do record in. And thank you for Noelle for being patient with me and deciding to come in here with me and record.
Excited to be here.
Thank you. I'm glad to have you. So again, we want to talk about what you have going on. You do have a nonprofit organization, and your nonprofit organization is called Barbell Ballet.
Barbell.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. I apologize for that. I was wondering if I was going to fuck that up, and I didn't.
No worries. So
excuse me, but Barbell Ballet. And the reason why she started this is because, as I stated, I made a little joke at the beginning, but she has a heavy background in ballet dancing. And it really, I would say, matriculated your career and a lot of things that you're doing now, correct? So that's what we just want to talk about. So I guess the first question I would like to start off with you is number one, what brought you to Charlotte?
What brought me to Charlotte? So I was working for the same company I do now. I work for a chemical company. And in Michigan, I was just at a place where I was ready for a change and something different. Grew up there after school, came back there, was working and kind of doing just the same thing over and over again. Same friends, same crowd. So there was an opportunity at work to transfer to Charlotte. And so I had never been here actually before. So yeah, I just took it and ran with it. And so I've been here 5 years. Only knew one person that I did work with at the time. So we weren't friends. Well, I wouldn't say we were friends at the time. We were, you know, associates. Did become really close, and she's actually one of the board members now for Barbell. But yeah, so definitely a step out on faith.
Okay. So did you know Ken in Michigan?
So my mom knew Ken.
So when I moved here,
she worked at the university with his aunt and the school that he went to. So she said, oh, I know someone that lives down there. You guys need to connect. And so Ken, you know, definitely put me in touch with a lot of different people as well. And he is also on the board.
I noticed that when I read it. So I said, huh, makes sense. I really thought you two knew each other in Michigan. Because when I saw you, I mean, y'all, like I said, I mean, I'm very observant.
Yeah.
And I think I had met Ken like prior to that, of course, because of mutual friends. But y'all seemed like y'all grew up together and knew each other and things like that. But I had no idea that you did not know.
Our group of friends just asked. I think this was a couple weeks ago.
How did y'all meet?
Yeah. Well, they referred to like, well, you guys have known each other forever. I'm like, y'all have known Ken longer than I have.
Wow.
So, okay. Yeah. No, it's funny, though. It was We're really close now, but yeah.
Shout out to Ken. Shout out to Ken. Ken's a good dude. So of course I made the joke with you about Misty Copeland. And the only reason why I made that joke is I will be honest with you, as an African American man, I'm not too familiar with the ballet world.
Sure.
My early thoughts about the ballet was the Nutcracker. Mm-hmm. I believe every kid has probably been dragged to a Nutcracker at some field trip or somewhere. And that was my only notice of that.
Okay.
So let's take another approach with it. With the ballet, growing up doing ballet, and as I stated, my ignorance to it because I wasn't very well educated in it. For you being an African-American woman, how did you get into it? Like, was that something that wasn't in your family, or is it something that you just kind of gravitated towards as at a young age?
Yeah, so I grew up watching Dominique Dawes. As a gymnast. So I loved her. Yes, me too. We always had the Olympics on. So I started off actually as a gymnast. I was getting into that pretty heavy at the time. So they asked that my mom put me in ballet to help with gymnastics. Mm-hmm. So ballet was really just like a supplemental piece of my, I guess, extracurriculars. But then there was a point in time where I, and E knows this because I am 5'1¾". there's a point in time where I wasn't growing, so the doctors were concerned. And during that period of time, they said, oh, it was when she started gymnastics. So they made me quit.
Oh, wow.
But my mom had obviously already paid for the ballet semester. My parents put a lot of money into that. So I had to finish out the semester for my dance classes. And that's sort of how it became a thing for me. And I just continued with it, fell in love with it, and yeah, so that's how I started in ballet.
Mm-hmm.
I think the first part of your question was being black in ballet.
Yes.
Yeah, definitely the only one in the studios for a good chunk of my life. And the studio that I did grow up in, there was a point where my parents didn't feel like I was really growing or getting the attention that I should as a developing dancer, mm-hmm. you know. So we found a studio, and my ballet teacher, Carmen D. Wade, she was a former dancer with the Dance Theater of Harlem,
mm-hmm.
which is a predominantly black dance company. So that was helpful. I was still one of the two at the studio that she taught at, but it was nice just having someone lead you in a class right. that, you know, had a similar experience. Like, she had already done that. She'd already gone through a lot of that stuff, similar mm-hmm. to, you know, the story that you hear about Misty Copeland and all mm-hmm. that. So me and my dance partner, so the guy that we would have our pas de deux, so that's the term for, you know, if you, when you see like the Nutcracker and you see the Sugar Plum Fairy and the Prince, he was black as well. So okay. our competitions, the few of us, but it was, you know, that partnership was great too to just have.
So you said your parents didn't feel that you was getting the development that you deserve. Mm-hmm. Do you feel that that development was based off of just pure training, or could it have been, you know, could it have been because of the color of your skin?
I'm not going to say it was strictly based on color, but I think a lot of the other students had siblings that were going there. They had put a lot of money into the company
mm-hmm.
Or the pre-professional company. There, you know, there's those relationships that they've developed. And, yeah, they didn't look like me, I will say that. Mm-hmm. And so I think that there was a piece of me that was maybe losing some confidence in my abilities.
Mm-hmm.
And my parents, I think, realized, like, this is if this is what it's going to be, and she's not going to be getting parts because of, mm-hmm. you know, whatever right. it was, that was the choice that they made. So
what other influences did you have growing up? You did mention Misty Copeland. You did mention a mentor of yours from the Dance Theater of Harlem. So what other influences that you had a chance to even look at to even say, look, ballet is something I want to kind of be a part of?
Yeah, I think one principal dancer that people don't, I guess, know a lot about, or she's not as maybe famous as Misty, is Lauren Anderson. So she is a darker skinned principal. She was a darker skinned principal dancer. She was with the Houston Ballet.
Okay.
So I would, it's funny, as Miss Carmen, she would show me before I had competitions, you know, look at Lauren Anderson. Her tights are brown. Her shoes, she's mm-hmm. painting brown. There's a reason for that. You know, I think a lot of people don't realize that when you see little kids in pink tights and pink ballet shoes, it's because the lines, you know, when you're looking at ballet and you're looking at the stage, it's all supposed to be just lines, right? Like as a audience member, you see the people, but it's all about the shapes that they're creating with their body. Mm-hmm. And you don't want that to be a distraction. So the reason why Lauren Anderson had dyed her tights brown and painted her shoes brown was to have that continuous line, because that's supposed to be your skin color. So those pink tights are supposed to mimic, you know, skin tones. And obviously that skin tone doesn't look like, you know, the majority of, the, you know, us. Right. Doesn't look like us. So, yeah, there were definitely times where I was wearing brown tights, brown shoes, and specifically for my competitions, she really instilled that in me. Like, this is you. Do it. And, you know, be proud of that. So
now you made another mention. You said principal dancer. Mm-hmm. What, for me to get a familiarity and an understanding, would a principal dancer be equivalent to an executive chef? Meaning they are the the top dog.
Yes. So there's different layers. You have the corps de ballet, so that's maybe like an apprentice. And corps in French means body. So that is the groups of dancers that you see that are moving all at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
I think when we talk about blacks in ballet, it is a little bit harder to join companies that are predominantly white, because you will stick out and they want all of them to look the same right. movement, right? So then you have, you know, the soloist or the demi-soloist. Mm-hmm. And so those are when you see quartets or duets. And then from there you have the principal dancers. And so it takes a, there's other levels in between as well, but it takes a while to get to that principal status that Misty had,
that Misty had.
Anderson had. Yep. And Misty, American Ballet Theater, is one of the most prominent companies.
It's the Michael Jordan of ballet.
It really is, right? In the U.S. and globally, like, this is a very renowned company. And so for her to have that title at that level is amazing. Like, I remember seeing her in my dance catalogs. Mm-hmm. So when she started getting real famous, and I think I saw her maybe at like the BET Awards, or somebody was like giving her an award.
It was like a few years ago when she kind of started making, which is where I started noticing.
Yes.
And as a man, I'm like, damn, she fine.
Yeah.
But I had no idea that she was big like that in ballet. Yes. And I think, and that does give another look for, you know, little girls. I mean, you always try to find things to see what else, but ballet is an area that, you just said it, there's really not a lot of African Americans, but there are some that really have made a name, for themselves. Were you the first person in your family that did ballet, or did anybody else?
So my mom was a dancer, but she was a modern dancer, so ballet wasn't
forte.
Yep. And then my dad's side, they did ballet, and there's pictures of like my Aunt Sonia with her, you know, leotard and tights and things, but I don't think they took it to the level of like the training that I did.
Mm-hmm. But your dad did not do ballet.
No, my dad did not do.
I mean, I wasn't even joking. I mean, because there are guys that, you know, I didn't know maybe there was something.
We need more guys. We need more dancers. We need more male dancers in ballet. We do, but no, my dad was not a dancer.
Hey, well, don't look at me. I'm not doing no ballet. At my age, I'm not doing no ballet.
Used to have the football players, though, come help us with our partnering, because we needed people to lift us, and they needed practice, I guess, lifting. So that was helpful, the local school.
And also with football players, and I found this out a long time ago, it does help with foot technique.
Yes.
You know, with them. So there were a few, they may not ever admit it, but, you know, they probably did go through some type of small training, probably a lot, but they probably did it privately, right, where it did, you know, it did help with their footwork.
They definitely weren't in class with us, but they were doing our lifting. I don't remember anybody like at the bar with us, but yes.
You're right. Don't be at the bar. Don't be at the bar. With ballet, some of the things that I did read about, you did state that it does help with self-esteem and self-awareness. Kids, that helps influence in ballet. And I guess that really played a big part in your development with it. Answer me this. And number one, please tell me if I'm saying these right.
Okay.
You told me, because I know I'm going to have a, I know you studied these techniques. The Vaganova technique. Say it again.
Vaganova.
Vaganova.
Yes.
Cicchetti.
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 Uh-huh.
Okay. And Coppelia? Coppelia.
Coppelia is an actual ballet.
Okay.
So that's not a technique, but that's a story that they, you know.
Okay, so you did, I apologize. Look, fellas, this is my notes, okay? So I probably kind of wrote it kind of fast. So your notable words is Capella, the Nutcracker, and Giselle.
Yes. And
did you solo work in those three at one point in time?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, Nutcracker, I would say probably had almost every part. I did Nutcracker from 8 to 16. Mm-hmm. So
okay.
You usually have multiple parts. But yeah, so I probably had almost every role in the Nutcracker.
Even a tree.
You know, I was a mouse, right? So when I was 8, I was a little mouse at the fight scene there. Every year we did a spring performance and we always did the Nutcracker. So the spring performance changed and Capella was one of them that I did several times based on the first studio and mm-hmm. the other one that I mentioned transferring over to.
So, I know we kind of skipped over because I couldn't say it right. Okay. What is the main importance of these techniques?
So, and we talked about me being a perfectionist, and it might come a little bit from this, but ballet is all about striving for a certain, I guess, sort of perfection in the way that your lines are and your feet are, because it's all making a picture, right? So if you're seeing a picture, there's all of these different parts.
Precision is very important when it comes to ballet.
Precision, yep. And so the difference in the technique, it's just even like an arm position may be called third in one and fifth in another, but they're all very similar. But some of the movements are different. One's Italian and one is Russian technique.
Okay. So. All right. Just want to know.
Just the source, I guess. Yeah.
I'm really interested in this. The Alvin Alley. Right?
Okay.
I really didn't start hearing about it till like recently.
Okay.
But I didn't know. I didn't know the magnitude and the significance mm-hmm. of this dance company. How did that play a part in your development? Was that a company that you kind of looked into or kind of looked up to?
Yeah.
And the next question is that predominantly African-American or is it the African-American? Like, I mean, you know.
So growing up, I would say it was predominantly. I went to the show last year and they have all different types of people in their foundation.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, how would you, being that you've been in Charlotte for the past 5 years, Was there a big, strong foundation of ballet prior to you moving here or upon your research before you had started Ballet?
Yeah, so they have the Charlotte Ballet. I was taking classes there just as an adult, like mm-hmm. adult open classes. There are a few different studios, but I think the mission of Barbell is to provide universal access. And so people don't know, I mean, maybe people do know this, but ballet is a very expensive art. Those point shoes that you see, the hard boxes, mm-hmm. those cost between $60 and $90 a pair. Mm. If you're training 4 to 5 times a week, those shoes, you'll need a new pair probably every 2 weeks. That's on top of whatever the tuition is for your studio. Mm-hmm. That's on top of your costumes for a recital. That's on top of the tutus. That's on top of your entrance fees for the competitions, your travel for the competitions. You're staying in hotels. They're not always local.
You haven't even got the time yet. Yeah, I mean, you haven't gotten to time that you have to put in to develop this.
3 or 4 hours an evening. Like, I would leave school and go straight to mm-hmm. the studio, and then you're there on Saturdays. So not only is it all of those resources, but your parents have to be able to or find transportation for you to get from point A to point B. I'm done with school at 2:30. My first class is at 4:30, right? Mm-hmm. So parents that are working, how do you, you know, so all of that requires just so much time and effort and money. So Barbell is to, you know, we bring the ballet bars to places where the students already are. So students that may not have parents that have flexible schedules like that, or parents that can devote all of those resources and time and energy into, you know, quality training, I want to be able to bring that to them regardless of transportation. They're already at, you know, the Boys and Girls Club. They're already at some of these after school programs mm-hmm. Because the bus is able to drop them off. Mm-hmm. So we go there to give them the training if they have an interest in it. But I think exposure is huge. To me, there's two levels of when you look at representation, especially in ballet, right? So you have the visibility. So we have the Lauren Andersons, we have the Misty Copelands, we have Alvin Ailey, we have Raven Wilkins, and all of these people that have, you know, paved a way, right? But we still don't have enough representation at that level. So when you're a child and you're looking at what you can do, and we see this in STEM as well, right? It's easier to say, I want to or I can. If you know somebody that's already doing it, like, oh, mom's a doctor or he's an engineer or whatever. You see people that look like you doing something, it's easier to say, I can or I want to do that, right? So while these people are at that level, like a Misty, and they are using their platform to really talk about the lack of representation and diversity in dance, that's the first layer. I think the second piece is what Barbell's mission is to expose, right? Because when you do get to that point and you see a few, but you don't see a lot. Mm-hmm. Oh, but I've done it before, right? So I did that when I was little, or they came to the Boys and Girls Club and I was able to, I tried it. So yeah, I want to try it again. When they're making those choices between sports or instruments or ballet, just because they don't see a lot of people that look like them doing it or know someone personally that's a professional ballerina, they've at least tried it. And I think that's how we can get more people to those levels, right? If they've tried it, they're not scared to do it.
Right.
They're exposed. They've seen it before. Because when you don't see something, it's harder to be like, yeah, I want to do it. You know, so that's part of our mission for that universal access is the resources, but just exposure to something different that they might not have on a regular basis.
And you've been, and this has been an organization for, when was it established?
February 2019. So
2019. Okay, I saw. I remember.
Two years.
Okay. I remember the idea. Yep. I remember you speaking on the idea of this organization. Yep. So from the time that you started till now, how do you feel about it today versus when you started?
I was completely scared to start something like this. I was doing a lot of outreach for church, and that's when I realized the transportation piece was an issue. Like, I always knew I wanted to encourage more kids of color to do this, because me being the only one for a while was tough, right? But when I did that and realized that transportation was an issue, like those kids couldn't even get to church because, you know, parents didn't have cars, right? So that was the point where I said, okay, well, maybe we can bring it to them. We can build the bars. We can make it portable. And so that was a big piece of it. But definitely scared in the beginning. How are our partners? Are they going to trust that I'm, you know, qualified to teach? Or are we going to get the traction that we need to? And so the board was really instrumental in that too. We have the community outreach chairs. They have partnerships with the Junior League, or, you know, the Greer Heights community was a big one. Boys and Girls Club, Charlotte Community Services Association. You know, we even did Ronald McDonald recently. So they have been instrumental in connecting us with community partners, and those relationships that they have helped build trust in our organization.
Okay, so talk about this, because you brought a very good point, and I want you to kind of expound on this, because first question is, when you first started this organization, did you already have your community board intact?
No, so I filed the paperwork, and then I sat there, and I think I had a meeting with the Boys and Girls Club director. And he goes, so who's on your board? Like, do you have a board? And so he actually helped me go back and say, okay, who can I trust that I know that, you know, well, this is my passion. It doesn't necessarily have to be theirs, but that will actually prioritize this and take this seriously. You don't want to have people that are the face of your organization in some aspects and really don't care.
And the reason why I asked that, I asked that question for a reason, because I think at the time when we are trying to figure out what we want to do, and a lot of people want to do nonprofit organizations. I'm one of them. I've been having this idea for a while, but I just haven't pulled a trigger on it.
Yep.
I think I'm finally at the point where I think I want to pull the trigger on this. But you got to start thinking about those things, because when you're doing a nonprofit, you do have, you know, I mean, on paper, you need a board.
Yep.
But a lot of ones that file for it don't understand that, which is why I wanted you to kind of touch on that.
Yep.
They don't understand how important a board can be. What I have noticed about your board, Ken is on your board.
Ken is on my board, yep.
But your parents are on your board.
Yes.
So.
Yes.
yes. And the reason why we're laughing is because I remember you was telling me, yeah, my parents are retired and they're finally going to move down here with me. And I know you was a little bit like, I like it, but I don't like it.
Yes, yeah.
So now that You've been here established for a while, and now they have been established. Is your mind changed now that your parents are here and they're able to be instrumental in what you're doing?
They are so helpful and so passionate about this. In the beginning, when it was just me teaching and we didn't have interns, they helped me break all the bars down, put them together. They were there with me all the time, like measuring the kids for the shoes, measuring for their leotards and tights, helping me with the music and all of that. So, yes, I think that the timing was perfect. And I am very much appreciative of.
I'm just messing with you because I remember the conversations where it was like, no, man, the whole purpose of me moving here.
It's to get away.
And now they followed you. But
yeah,
it worked out to your benefit because, like you said, when you're trying to find people for your board, who can you trust?
Right.
And your parents was there with you when you needed the help most.
Right.
So.
And they have background in it, right? Like, they understand how much time and energy and resources it takes to get to a certain level. And they sacrificed a lot when I was growing up doing that. So
they want to pay it forward.
Yes, that. And because I didn't pursue it professionally, I think they were looking at me at one point like, why do we do all this?
Right? I don't put all this money. So at one point you did want to do it professionally.
I think, yeah, there was a point where I was on the fence. If I wanted to audition, if I wanted to just go straight to college, because in the summers, I was dancing with Pittsburgh Ballet Theater and Atlanta Ballet. Like, I was doing those training programs. And that, in a sense, you're there for 5 or 6 weeks. They would drive me out there, leave me there, you know. And that training was a lot of, again, a huge sacrifice, I think, just in general. But, yeah, so I think, like, when I was like, I don't want to do this. I don't think I want to do this professionally. I just remember my dad looking at me like, what? So I think they love the fact that I'm like, all of their efforts and what I wanted to do at a certain time, like, it is paying it forward. There is a reason for it. It didn't just, you know, when you get burnt out of something. I took a couple years off. And then when I went to college, I didn't want to minor in it. I ended up doing that. But I saw like some flyers and I said, oh, I'll audition for the whatever. They had like a showcase or something. And then I realized, okay, well, I'm going to take these classes because I miss it. You know, when you've done it for so long and it's a part of you.
It was a passion at one point.
Yep.
Still a passion, but, you know, I guess at that time it was a passion at one point. You wanted to decide to get
into it. It has to still be a passion because some of the kids, they love it and some are doing it because somebody told them they have to.
Right.
So the patience and when you're teaching class. Yeah.
And another thing you should mention is there's money out there for doing this, you know, getting scholarships. So there is a, there is a need for it, depending on where you're trying to go, that you may be totally shocked that if you're nice enough that you can get a scholarship for ballet.
And this is a plug for any male dancers. And we talked about them earlier. Typically, a male dancer from child through whenever, they don't usually have to pay or tuition at studios because they need
males.
So a lot of times they're on a scholarship or they're offering money and studios want you because there's just not a lot of them. And I think there's a stigma to attach to that, and that's why. But yeah, I think if you any parents listening or whatever, if you have a kid that shows even a little bit of interest, like, I would encourage them to do that because we need it, and there is a lot of money out there, especially for boys, I would say.
Do you have any boys in your program?
The first semester, we had one boy. And in the summer when we were doing the workshops at the different camps with Freedom School Partners, the entire class had to do it. So I remember these boys looking like, we're going to have to do ballet. And so we talked about football, and, you know, so I brought that in, and they were actually really good. Like, they enjoyed it. And at the end they were like, oh, this is really hard. And I'm like, yeah, like, it's the purpose of it. It's to look easy. It's to look pretty, right? It's for entertainment, but every step that you do, it's definitely a workout.
Oh, I believe it. I believe it just from looking, you know, that it takes a lot of precision.
Yeah.
To do those type of things. And that's the biggest part about doing ballet. You know, of course, you know, as an adult now, you know, a stigma, I ain't gonna call it a stigma, but, you know, you watch TV shows or you hear about people and their wives Mm-hmm. Man, my wife dragging me to an opera or a ballet for one, because you got to put on, you know, that was just always a big thing. But
yeah,
I think Alvin Alley, mm-hmm. you know, that has kind of changed it. Because I think at one point in time, I think I was going to go. I don't know what happened.
Oh, for my birthday?
Yeah. I don't know what happened. I don't know if I had to work or something like that. And I was like, okay, well, I know that's kind of her background, so it makes sense.
Yes.
But I still wasn't too familiar. I always just kept screaming, oh, that's what Misty Copeland do, her fine ass.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I'm saying? But then I also saw I had other friends that that made it their due diligence to go to it. So I kind of started getting a little bit familiar with it. Now, am I just sitting there just watching? Nah, I think my only recollection of the ballet is
Nutcracker,
The Nutcracker. Alvin and Ellie now.
Yeah.
It's Save the Last Dance.
I mean, there you go. Now, my dad loves that movie, okay?
But you know, it's like that's the only time that I think about it. So let me ask you a question. I'm gonna try to be a little funny here. Mm-hmm. How are you all able to keep your feet good? And I mean, because you, like you said, when you have the shoes on, is there still, you always on your tippy, that's why you twinkle toes, tippy toes. So is it, how do they tell you? The only reason I ask the question, because I'm curious. Yeah. I'm curious of my own damn self. Uh-huh. Because when I think about ballet, I'm thinking about you got some crusty ass feet because you always on your toes and stuff like that. But that's a myth. That's a myth. And it could be a misconception at times.
Yes. I think that.
Because some people do got some fucked up feet.
Yes. I would say that. My feet now, I'm not in my point shoes. So when I was in my point shoes at the time, I will say feet probably weren't looking as great. I didn't go get pedicures back at that point, because you want to build those calluses so that every time you go up, you're not, when it's like soft skin and stuff like that, it's going to hurt every single time.
So the callus is a big deal to have in order to stand on your tippy
calluses.
Toe.
I know some people have bunions. You're always going to have blisters. And in that hard shoe, you do have a little bit of padding, but it's thin because you still want to be able to feel the floor. So your toes still need to feel the floor in that shoe, so you're grounded. Yep. So I wouldn't say it's a misconception. I definitely think that nobody had cute feet at my studio. I will say that. And when you look at Alvin Ailey and those dancers, they're not using shoes.
Yeah.
So.
Their feet got to be jacked up.
Right.
You didn't want to say that.
Yeah, I was like, definitely but, not a misconception.
Okay, so my question really wasn't a stupid question. Because, because that's something to really think about. Because I'm like, damn.
Yeah.
Your feet got to be bad. Because.
Yeah.
Especially if you're not used to it. So, I'm very aware that there's certain things that on your body, depending on what you're doing, you got to build up some type of shell.
Correct. And most girls, they don't go on point and probably between 11 and 13 years old, because you want to make sure the ankles are strong enough. So they go on between that age, and then if you're doing that from 13 to 18, you know, you got a long run there.
So when you're recruiting for your organization, and I know you kind of stated, I guess, the partnerships you have, do you rely on those partnerships to bring you clientele for the students, or do you actively go out and recruit? Is there like a certain way that you – try to bring awareness to your organization?
Yeah, it's a little bit of both. So I do private lessons through the organization. But also, the partnerships that we have, it's like, I want to bring this. Do we have an interest there? And there may be 10 kids that sign up and so then we rotate that. Sometimes it's just workshops, like, you know, you said the Nutcracker. So Debbie Allen has her Hot Chocolate Nutcracker on Netflix coming out, so we're doing a night at the Nutcracker. So typically, when we were pre-COVID, we took the kids to a professional performance so they could see why we do class, right? And that's what a lot of the donations and grant money comes in, just because, again, I want them to be able to see we're not just at the bar for fun. Like, this is what it looks like. This is what you could be if you really wanted to do it and worked really hard. And so COVID, the theaters aren't open. So our friend has a blow up movie theater type thing. So we're bringing that and putting that in the gym, and they're going to watch the Hot Chocolate Nutcracker behind the scenes type of thing from Netflix. So they have exposure there. So they see what it looks like on the screen.
All right. So one of my last questions for you.
Okay.
And this is dealing with specifically about Charlotte.
Okay.
You kind of talked about it in pieces throughout this whole conversation. How important do you feel art, and art like ballet, just art in general, how important do you feel that is to a child's development, number one? And how have you, upon doing your research of starting your organization in Charlotte, how does that matriculate to Charlotte and the residents and the kids of Charlotte?
Yeah, I think that in general, art just creates an opportunity for them to be innovative. So in class, they're following what we do. But then there's also points in class where I say, okay, you know, I give them a theme. So I'm like, okay, you're going to have winter and you're going to have fall. Show me what that looks like with movement. Show me what that looks like with stuff that we've done. I give them a song. I give them a few minutes. I'll put them in groups, or if it's one-on-one. And they are creating, they're developing these, you know, cognitive skills of like, okay, well, I like the way this looks, or I like the way this feels, or this reminds me of snow, or this reminds me of snow falling. This reminds me of, I know their favorite one was, what's your favorite candy? Right? So M&Ms. Okay, well, show me what M&Ms, are they hard? Are they sticky? And what movements look like? So that piece, I think, is really good when it comes to development, you know, self-esteem. They're now performing in front of their peers. They're encouraged to, oh, that's great. Like what you're doing, you created that yourself. This is your imagination that you're, you know, and so all of that, that's the self-confidence, that's the self-esteem, that's the innovation piece. And then they're actively moving. So you have that physical activity as well. So I think that's important just in any child's development. But in Charlotte specifically, that's just always been something that I've wanted to do. I know there are, the Charlotte Ballet does have an extension program, which is Reach. However, theirs is different because ours is not to create necessarily professional ballerinas. That one you have to audition for, and you know, there's a certain body type musicality. And
you have to check the boxes.
You have to check the boxes. And ours
and that's
is
the one that, is that the one that's uptown?
Yes. Yep. Okay. And so they do have a community-based, I guess, part of their curriculum, but you still do have to audition for that. And ours is, if you want to do it,
come as you are.
It's recreational. If we have dancers that eventually are professionals, I would love it if they said, oh, we started with barbell. Like, this is why we wanted to do it. But it's just for exposure, really, and something for them to look at and say, I can do if it's sports. Music, you know,
right.
Else, so
okay, so that's great information to know. So if you are listening, people, make sure that your child does not play a tree, right? Because based off of everything that you said, there is no way in hell you could get any type of development or any type of movement in being a tree.
You could be a tree blowing in the wind, and the Nutcracker, the Christmas tree, is pretty static. It grows a little bit, but it's
most trees in plays are just pretty stagnant.
Correct. Yeah, there you okay. go. Okay, that's fair.
But there's other things that you can do. So, Ms. Pipkin, thank you for taking the time out to talk to me about it. I thought this would be a little bit different from my normal at the go of who I try to reach out to.
Yes.
Like I said, ballet is foreign. It's foreign to us, and I just knew with you doing it. You being an African American, I knew there was some place within that, within your creation of it, that you want to be, you want to expose that to African American kids. So I just wanted to kind of talk about it, but I also wanted to gain some information and knowledge for myself. I kind of walked out here. Now I'm going to walk out of here 10% more than what I didn't know.
I like it.
10% more than what I didn't know.
Yes.
So I'm not. Now I'm a little bit less ignorant.
Yes.
Less ignorant. Of course, I've made my jokes here and there, but great information. As far as part of my show, what I like to always ask all of my guests is one question. So what's next for Barbell Ballet?
We are in these COVID times. So we did a lot of virtual things this summer, a lot of at-home dance activities for the kids that we dropped off. So they were making their own tutus, or they were doing bingo with ballet vocabulary or crossword puzzles. We did classes on Zoom. So I think that we're going to continue expanding our partnerships, looking for more interns. A lot of the schools around here trying to just garner, you know, support and interns that have the same passion. If you want to give back and you need teaching hours, we sign off on those. Mm. You know, I write recommendation letters for, you know, the last two that we've had. So just continuing to expand in the Charlotte community and finding more partnerships of an interest, I guess, of, you know, the answers. So.
Well, thank you again.
Yeah.
Thank you again for talking to me about your organization. I thoroughly enjoyed this conversation, but I always enjoy talking to you.
Yeah, no, this is my first time on a podcast, so this is exciting.
Hey, but you know what? Trust me, this won't be your last. Yeah. I know for a fact it won't be your last, and I'm gonna tell you why about offline.
Okay.
it's not gonna be your last, but I do wish you the much success.
Yes.
Of course, in any way possible, if I could be of any service, I would be more than glad to.
Yes, thank you.
I'm not putting on no tutu, but and I'm not standing on my toes, but I'm willing to do something.
Yes, all volunteers are welcome. Yes, we will find something for you to do.
I'll do a do-si-do or what you call it?
Pas-de-deux?
Whatever.
There you go. You can lift some of the kids, throw them up, you know.
Right. But I'll be able to do that. But so thank you. So just let everybody know where they could find you, the information that you want to put out to my listeners to know where they could reach out.
Sure. So our website is barbellballet.org. Bar is B as in boy, A-R-R-E, bell, B-E-L-L-E, ballet. .org. And then social media is the same. So at Barbell Ballet, spelled the same way.
Cool. Again, in this episode, please don't judge me on some of the words that I said. I'm a very great speller and I know how to pronounce words, but these were very difficult.
Yes.
And without the person telling me, I wouldn't have known. So
that's
I apologize.
What I'm here for.
So I apologize if I said anything wrong.
No
thank you for
is.
Correcting me, and I have no problem with being corrected. But again, this is E-Dub, and thank you. You are tuning in to the Who Got Next podcast. If you want to reach out to me, please do. You can catch me on my Instagram at whogotnext_CLT. And if you have any questions, any comments, good, bad feedback, I'm willing to accept it all. You can email me. My email is whogotnextclt@gmail.com. And like I always say, if you out there doing something dope, doing something constructive, doing something that's going to get you in a positive light, I'm paying attention. Trust me. And when I pay, and since I'm paying attention, we will talk about what you have going on next. All right. Thank you again. Peace.